Welcome to episode 4 of Yesterday's Indianapolis, a podcast about the over 200-year history of the Circle City. My name is Ed Fujawa, and today's topic is going to kind of go back to, or is going to look into an area that has been covered quite a bit on my Class 900 Indy.com Indianapolis history blog, and that is the impact of waterways on the history of Indianapolis. So Indianapolis has several waterways that have contributed in various ways to the city's history and to its growth and development over the years. Fall Creek, White River, Pogue's Run, Pleasant Run, Eagle Creek, and several other kind of smaller waterways, and even the Central Canal, which is, while not a natural waterway, certainly has impacted the city. Today's podcast is going to look at a bit of history about the White River. And the White River, I've written a lot about this on the blog, and it's the major waterway that goes through Marion County and goes through Indianapolis. And it's a significant waterway in that its location was a factor when the state of Indiana sent commissioners to select a site for Indianapolis for the new seat of government back in the early 1820s. One of the requirements was that the new seat of government had to be on a navigable waterway. And the White River, going through Marion County, is a navigable waterway. It's more of a legal definition versus, I guess, in reality, where, as it turned out, the waterway, the river itself, was not great for commerce, for water traffic. There was some commerce, some water traffic, although limited, mostly recreational. But it is still legally a navigable river. So, and besides the site of the city of Indianapolis, the river has provided kind of recreation for the city, and it's also a water source in that it feeds water into the Central Canal at Broad Ripple, which flows downtown to water treatment plants just north of downtown. So the White River, not only, you know, the recreational component, you know, watercraft component, which again was minimal, but also that it provided drinking water and still provides drinking water to the city. And at times, the river has been a threat to life and property, especially during the periods of high water and floods, which we've seen in the past, especially 1904, 1913, which were two very bad floods. So on the north side of the city, the White River goes through Broad Ripple and kind of goes through this kind of shallow valley. And you can really see that west of Broad Ripple all the way down towards Riverside Park, where there's bluffs on either side of the river, particularly around Holiday Park and the Meridian Street Bridge, down towards Rocky Ripple, Butler Tarkington, the area where the International School is, where Michigan Road crosses the river right by the Art Museum. That's a particularly good example where the road goes over the river, and you can see off in the distance where the road goes up and over the northern end or northern side of the valley. So there's kind of this valley that continues all the way down towards Riverside Park. There's bluffs on Riverside Park, and then it kind of fades away and dwindles around about 16th Street. But north of there, there's a definite valley for the river. You know, over the years, the river has had its issues with pollution. I've written about that on Class 900 Indy before, although it's much better than it used to be. But really, over the years, the river has often been taken for granted. And that is changing. There's a lot more recreation on the river, a lot more fishing, a lot more boating, things along those lines. But, you know, going back 100 years, there was actually a forgotten proposal which could have drastically changed the landscape of Indianapolis as a whole, and particularly the Midtown area, involving the river if the plan had been approved. So this proposal arose in the early 1920s when Indianapolis political leaders gave serious consideration to what was a plan to dam the White River just north of downtown in order to create a lake in the lowlands adjacent to what was then Fairview Park. Again, I mentioned the valley, and the valley would have created that lake. Fairview Park, which at the time in the early 1920s was still a park and is today the location of Butler University. And in fact, in the early 1920s, Butler University was in the process of working to purchase that property so it can move its campus from Irvington on the east side, where the university, where the college was based, over to the Fairview Park campus, which is its current location. So in a time before Eagle Creek or Geist Reservoirs, the latter, Geist Reservoir, would not be constructed for another 25 years, the prospect of a lake relatively close proximity to the city core gained quite a bit of popular support, especially for the potential recreational and park options such a plan would provide. The idea of a lake on the White River adjacent to Fairview Park had been percolating and was championed by Mayor Charles Jewett. On October 5, 1921, the Indianapolis News reported that the city had desired the lowlands of Fairview Park as a site for a lake to be formed by placing a dam in the White River above Northwestern Avenue. Now, Northwestern Avenue is what Michigan Road used to be called, basically within the city. Northwestern Avenue was later had its name changed to Martin Luther King Jr. Street, but then north of 38th Street, it would later take on the name or return to the name of Michigan Road, although it was still referred to as Northwestern Avenue at times. By early 1922, the lake plan began to gain steam, and Jewett's successor, Lew Schenck, also backed the lake proposal. His interest appears to have been piqued following a discussion with Richard Lieber, and Lieber was the then head of Indiana's Department of Conservation, basically the predecessor to today's Department of Natural Resources, and he was the founder of our state park system. According to the Indianapolis Star, a meeting between the mayor and Lieber in February of that year resulted in the mayor vowing to inspect the lake site. Lieber's main point was reported to be that damming of the river would help create a reservoir which would help ensure a steady supply of water for the city into the future. In addition to the water supply, suggestions for use of the lake included summer resorts along its shoreline, an amusement park, and speedboat races, so all these activities which could be attracted if there was a lake at this location. The Indianapolis Star also disclosed that a bunch of gravel pits on the south side of the city had also been considered for the creation of an urban lake for recreational usage, but the testing of the water in that area raised concerns about contamination as well as some long-term water supply issues, whether or not they can maintain the water levels. Thus, the focus for a urban lake was switched to the White River Valley up around the Fairview Park area. On February 26, 1922, the Indianapolis Star ran a two-page spread on the proposed lake under a large and somewhat drawn-out headline, which read, quote, Indianapolis to possess great summer resort if Mayor Schenck's proposal to dam White River and flood lowlands is accepted. So the proposal to actually do this was still rather nebulous and was really more talk and discussion than any sort of concrete plan, although the Indianapolis Star, along with this article, did provide a map showing where the lake would be located if the dam was constructed at the Michigan Road / Northwestern Avenue Bridge over the White River. The reporter on this story, Miles Tiernan, lamented the lack of a summer resort on a natural body of water in the city, saying, quote, Indianapolis, called the greatest inland city in the world, which seems to be true, was showered with so many gifts of nature and circumstance that a large natural body of water was withheld to keep her from being entirely perfect, according to local historians, end quote. Aside from the perhaps grandiose views of these, quote, local historians, end quote, Tiernan reported that Mayor Schenck cited the recreational benefits, water supply, and flood control aspects of the proposed lake, and that the lake is something the city, quote, must have, and would, quote, push the population of Indianapolis up to the 500,000 mark quicker than anything else ever started here, end quote. While there was much talk about the lake and its benefits, there was still little planning being done. The Indianapolis Star recognized that in order to have the water at a certain depth, the central canal would need to be addressed, suggesting that a conduit be constructed to continue the flow of the canal while allowing the water level to rise over the level of the canal itself. And that's because at the time, the central canal, well, it still is true today, the central canal runs along the bluff, which would have created the banks of the lake itself. So as the water level went up, especially around the Butler University area or the Art Museum area, as the water level went up, the canal would have been basically subsumed within the lake. So there weren't really any concrete plans, but the city was still looking around at other lakes in the Midwest as kind of examples of what could be done in Indianapolis. To that end, in June of 1922, Mayor Schenck, using a specially chartered train, led a delegation of over 400 citizens to view a newly constructed dam and lake in Decatur, Illinois, as a possible model for a lake in Indianapolis. This lake was Lake Decatur, appropriately named, on the Sagamon River. The Indianapolis Star optimistically declared that, quote, decades from now, when the inhabitants of the city feel a cooling breeze from an artificial sea, everyone will look back with pity on the arid life of their ancestors, end quote. The delegation was impressed with the lake in Decatur, Illinois, although the Star noted that the lake bed was mostly dry as the construction on the lake was not yet complete. Additionally, renowned landscape architect George Kessler voiced support for the lake, which would complement his plan of boulevards and parks for the city. And Kessler was the architect behind the city's rather expansive boulevard and parks plan. Additionally, the trustees and administration of Butler College, which again was then in the process of purchasing Fairview Park, also voiced support for the lake adjacent to their hopefully new campus. So jumping ahead slightly to early 1923, which a lot happened with the lake in 1923, but in March of that year, Mayor Schenck and an expedition of other city officials, including various experts and engineers from the Indianapolis Water Company, toured the land along the White River west of Fairview Park, basically the lowlands of the White River. Today, this land would encompass the Butler University sports fields, the town of Rocky Ripple, the International School campus, located off of Michigan Road, as well as the Crystal DeHaan property, which is now a restoration hardware. Also along Michigan Road. Also included in this would be the 100-acre woods park area, which belongs to Newfields, a.k.a. the Indianapolis Art Museum. Despite these tours, no formal survey had yet to be completed, and the cost of the lake was estimated to be $1.5 million, with a dam being located along the 38th Street line. At the time, 38th Street ended right at the White River. There was no bridge, but they were part of the proposal was that there would be an earthen dam that would stretch across the valley along that line, and then the dam would carry 38th Street across the valley to the other side. Additionally, another problem that had popped up was that the town of Rocky Ripple had been platted in the early 1920s as a neighborhood just to the north of Butler University's current location, and homes were already being built in the lowland area, which was nestled kind of between the canal and a large bend in the White River. The Star described the existing structures in that area as of the, quote, inexpensive type, end quote. Mayor Schenck and his delegation indicated that immediate action would be needed to begin condemnation proceedings in order to halt further development in Rocky Ripple and the rest of the White River Valley and to limit the cost to the city to obtain these already developed properties. A March 16, 1923 Indianapolis Star article addressed additional concerns about the lake, including about the Central Canal, which again parallels the White River from Broad Ripple to 38th Street, and the potential that the canal would have to be abandoned due to the lake's water level, or that the construction of a large levee to protect it from the lake's waters would be needed and would add additional expense. The Indianapolis Water Company, which news reports initially indicated was favoring the lake, opposed the abandonment of the canal, since the canal was, and still is, a major source of drinking water for the city. An additional consideration for the water company was that they had also begun to consider early plans to construct a reservoir in the Fall Creek Valley northeast of downtown, a reservoir which they would actually have control over versus this lake, which would be under city control. And they eventually did move forward with such a project, and that would later become known as Geist Reservoir. This issue with the canal was in addition to the still unanswered question whether the structural hurdles associated with the construction could be overcome, namely whether a dam could be successfully built across the valley at the line of 38th Street. On April 26, 1923, the Board of Park Commissioners for the City of Indianapolis acted and approved a resolution to appropriate land in the valley of the White River north of 38th Street, including the land around Rocky Ripple. The resolution noted that the appropriation was for, quote, park purposes of the city of Indianapolis, end quote. No mention of the lake is made, and the commission set May 17, 1923 as a deadline for remonstrations by interested parties. In early May of 1923, Charles Buchwalter, the president of the Board of Park Commissioners and also a former mayor himself, and Mayor Schenck consulted with Dabney H. Morey, a hydraulics engineer from Chicago with experience in the construction of reservoirs and other waterworks-related projects. Originally, Mr. Morey appeared poised to be handed the project following the death of George Kessler on March 23, 1923, although Morey's own statements to the media, while praising the use of available water resources by cities, were also carefully neutral on the White River plan. According to a May 4, 1923 Indianapolis News article, he noted that, quote, too late, cities all over the country are coming to the realization that they have lost their waterfronts, end quote. He continued by noting that it was, quote, impossible, end quote, to determine the location of the needed dam for the lake until borings had been done to determine whether the area could support the dam structure. He also emphasized that, quote, it is always essential that careful preliminary surveys and investigation be made before undertaking any project involving the construction of a dam immediately above a city, end quote. Of course, this is due to the risk of loss and of not only property, but also life if the dam failed. And you can imagine if there was a large dam at 38th Street, that which would fail, that would send a wall of water charging not only through the Riverside Park area, but straight into the downtown area. Morey also noted that the flow of the river and the potential for sedimentation buildup would also have to be considered to determine the viability of the lake. The sedimentation issue actually became a problem for Lake Decatur, which had been visited by Mayor Schenck and his party back in 1922. And even today, sedimentation in that lake is still a problem, and there's constant dredging operations that have to be done. So following his visit to the city in May of 1923, Morey forwarded a letter to Bookwalter describing his initial assessment of the lake location and noted that wells sunk in territory along the river where the lake would be created found a, quote, deep stratum of sand and gravel, end quote, which was not an ideal foundation for a dam. Further, Morey stated that, quote, nowhere in the vicinity of the proposed lake is there any outcrop of bedrock, and no information is at present available to the writer as to the depth at which rock or clay or any other reasonably impervious stratum would be encountered in the vicinity of the point at which it would be advisable for other reasons to construct the dam, end quote. So essentially what Morey was saying was that there was, in order to build a stable foundation for the dam and in order to find a solid ground or solid material to lock in the abutments, which were the sides of the dam, which would basically lock the dam into the sides of the valley, there really wasn't anything there. Nothing had been found or no information had been provided to him which would show that this material, that there was solid enough ground to support such a dam. Despite this, Mayor Schenck moved to request a $25,000 appropriation for the city council to cover the cost of surveys of the lake site, as well as test borings to check the dam site and the composition of the proposed lake bottom. Mayor Schenck's request for $25,000 was met with skepticism by the Indianapolis City Council, and on May 21, 1923, the news reported that John King, the president of the council, indicated that he did not support the lake plan, and that his fellow members of the council also expressed opposition to the lake. While the city's Board of Park Commissioners had passed resolutions approving the acquisition of land in the river bottoms, the council still needed to approve funding to allow feasibility studies to proceed. Mayor Schenck seemed to take this kind of step back in stride and indicated that the funding for the studies would be drawn from the Park Board's budget, a move which would presumably not require approval from the full council. On May 28, 1923, the Board of Park Commissioners approved a four-man survey corps, quote, to make the survey of the ground between the canal and the White River, end quote. Butler College, in the midst of purchasing Fairview Park, still supported the lake. And in fact, a diagram appeared in the July 22, 1923 Indianapolis Star, which was showing kind of a proposed plan for the college at the Fairview Park site. And of note, on the far left, there's a water area that says proposed lake. The proposed lake continued to garner much local attention. Later in May 1923, Indianapolis Star article detailed Indianapolis's water-based assets and again extolled the recreational opportunities of the proposed lake, including, quote, high-powered boat races, sailing, aquaplaning, and similar aquatic events, end quote. In June, Charles Geist, the president of the Indianapolis Water Company, visited the city and met with Mayor Schenck and indicated a willingness to provide 100 acres in the White River Valley, which was owned by the water company, to the city for the use in the lake project. He also provided water company engineers to consult on the project, which was seemingly a change in heart from their original concerns relating the loss of the Central Canal. The proposed lake was also a topic of conversation amongst the Indianapolis Scientech Club, a social group started in 1918, which, quote, provides a forum for weekly presentations and discussions in the fields of science and technology and other topics for enlightenment of its membership, end quote. The proposed lake was a topic of several meetings for the club in 1923, and a committee to study the proposal was formed by the club. A newsletter from the club in June, dated June 23, 1923, detailed some of the potential benefits of the lake. And there's actually, reading it, there's actually a listing where it says, quote, it was generally agreed that the advantages of a lake would include water supply, boating, swimming, fishing, material for political speeches, which might have been a tongue-in-cheek advantage, naval reserve for use as training, breeding fish and mosquitoes, again, perhaps a tongue-in-cheek advantage, skating, as well as petting parties. And petting parties was kind of a trend in the early 1920s, especially amongst teenagers, which basically it sounded like make-out parties, which were rather frowned upon by many, but was very popular amongst teenagers of the time. So again, that might be a kind of a joking advantage by the membership of the Scientech Club. During a July 1923 meeting of the Scientec Club, John Elliott, the engineer for the city of Indianapolis, also presented about the project. The main takeaway from his talk was the lack of information about the lake site, and what limited information was available was not based on actual surveys. The newsletter recounted the meeting and the presentation and noted that the topographical survey was being conducted on the valley at that time, which would hopefully answer several questions. Included in these questions, as detailed in the Scientec Club newsletter dated July 2, 1923, was the height of the dam permissible and the depths of the water attainable, the areas that will be inundated by the water, the amount of water that can be impounded, whether the lake site will hold water, and dam foundation conditions. So all these problems that Maury had detailed earlier were kind of being repeated here in July of 1923 as surveys were being done. And the Scientec Club newsletter also expressed concern about whether the dam would at times impede the flow of the river so much that there would be no flow downstream, noting that at times water even failed to flow over the Broad Ripple Dam farther north during particularly dry conditions, and this would lead to very little water flow farther downstream. Even if the lake was not practicable, the newsletter opined that the city obtaining the land in the valley would be useful for flood control purposes and would also clear out the Rocky Ripple area, which was referred to as a, quote, shack section, end quote. The newsletter described potential that the land could be incorporated into the city's park plan, with not only parkland encompassing woodlands, but also lagoons, driveways, all connected down to Riverside Park, which had its own kind of lagoon and waterway system. The parkland idea seemed to become more popular, and many references to the lake in the local press had evolved into a plan for a series of parks, arboretums, and the small lagoons in the targeted lowlands. Comments to the press by the city's engineer, again John Elliott, in the late summer of 1923 suggested that the engineering question still had not been solved, and while the topographical survey continued, the feasibility of the plan could not be determined. Elliott also discovered a potential dredging plan for the lake, which would see the city dredge the floor of the White River Valley to remove gravel and other material, and essentially to dig out the lake itself, although he estimated this process could take 15 to 20 years to complete. After these kind of comments by Elliott and in the late summer of 1923, mentions of the lake plan begin to fade in local newspapers, and as well as the minutes of the city council and park commission, although no formal notice was given that the plan was not being pursued. In January of 1924, appraisers who had been retained by the city to kind of look at the potential cost for obtaining the land in the valley reported that the price tag for purchasing property in the valley would exceed $650,000. Under the headline, quote, Municipal Lake Possibility Dim, end quote, the Indianapolis Times reported that the cost for the property was much more than the Park Commission's original $300,000 estimate. In response, the park board that month rescinded all previous actions taken to acquire land for the lake, effectively ending the lake proposal. Residual issues related to the lake continue to be dealt with, including a long-standing refusal by the city park board to pay fees to the appraisers who evaluated the land which was to be inundated by the proposed lake, due to what the park board was saying was the excessiveness of their build services. The same news brief which reported on this issue with the appraisers also noted that the lake project had been abandoned due to engineering studies which found the plan unfeasible, although I have been unable to locate the result of the topographical survey or the engineering report that finally determined this. However, these references might have been going back to, or at least confirming, the concerns from the letter by Dabney H. Maury describing the potential problems with the site, including the lack of bedrock outcroppings and other kind of solid ground for the construction of a dam foundation. It is possible that the 38th Street site would not have been stable enough to support the massive dam, which would have been about 3,000 feet in length, which would be needed to seal off the valley and hold back the resultant lake. This and the higher-than-expected estimate to purchase the property within the lake bed appears to have led to the demise of the lake plan. So had the reservoir been constructed, its impact would have been, I think, substantial on not only Indianapolis, but particularly kind of the north side, the Midtown area. And you have all these neighborhoods. Not only would Butler College, today's Butler University, have been a lakeside university, but parts of Butler Tarkenton, farther south past the Art Museum, would have all been lakeside communities. And a large amount of the valley would have been inundated and covered in water. And as we've seen with Geist Reservoir, which was constructed in the early 1940s, at first a lot of that area around Geist Reservoir was maintained as a park. But as years went by, Development Corporation was founded. And as we know now, the area was heavily developed into homes as well as a few commercial areas, marinas, things like that. So I think what we might have seen is a similar development to what happened in Geist at this lake, with, you know, a lakeside communities popping up, marinas, businesses related to the lake, as well as, of course, a university being on the shores of the lake. But the hypothetical dam and municipal lake remain just that, hypothetical. And today, the river continues to flow through the valley much as the way it did 100 years ago. And as I noted, no, there were other reservoirs being planned, and this was a harbinger to other construction being done to create the Geist Reservoir, and again, early 1940s, and then Eagle Creek in the 1960s. And even farther north, up in Hamilton County, Morse Reservoir, which was in the 1950s, which, while it's outside of Marion County, it's a impounding reservoir that's designed to supplement water in the White River, because, again, water from the White River goes into the Central Canal, flows downtown to supply water to the city of Indianapolis, and Morse Reservoir is designed to supplement that. But going back to a midtown lake with a dam at 38th Street is certainly an interesting idea. Could have been a massive change, a massive impact on the north side of Indianapolis. But in the end, it appears under the technology that they had available at the time, it was just not possible. So thank you again for joining me for yesterday's Indianapolis. There will likely be future blog posts related to waterways. Waterway history, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, is one of my favorite things to explore about Indianapolis. Not only how the waterways have impacted Indianapolis, but also how we and the city's development impact those waterways. So thank you again for listening. A quick postscript to this podcast. This episode about the White River Lake in the Midtown area of Indianapolis was actually based upon a initially published 2018 blog post on class900indy.com. I later updated the blog post and republished it, I think, in 2021, but this was one of the original blog posts on the class900indy.com site. And there will be a link to that blog post in the show notes if you are so interested.